Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. This week, we want to give a shout out to a couple of our supporters on Patreon, and our Patreon page is patreon.com/cooltools. And this week's episode is brought to you by our Patreon supporters, Josiah Martins and Dan Spakowitz. Thank you very much, Josiah and Dan. I appreciate it. And we have a great guest this week. His name is Noso Edemoya. He's a PhD student at the University of Michigan, and he's working on controls of 3D printers, which is something near and dear to my heart. How are you, Nosa?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on.
It's so wonderful to have you here, and we're really looking forward to your picks of favorite cool tools.
I'm looking forward to talking about them. I'm excited.
Yeah, and so, I mean, the first one on your list is something that I'm excited about. I've owned a few different 3D printers so far in my life. I'm now using a Prusa 3D printer that I really like, but I'm sure you have access to some really nifty ones. Tell us about 3D printers and why you like them, what you do with them, controlling them, all that good stuff.
And which one you would suggest we get?
Yeah, that's a good first question. So I work with a variety of different 3D printers, and currently I'm working on trying to control some of the more non-traditional 3D printers. So the traditional 3D printers that you see are the Cartesian 3D printers, where you have one motor that moves the x-axis motion, and you have another motor that moves the y-axis motion. But I'm working with 3D printers that have coupled dynamics. They're called parallel axis 3D printers. So one is the Delta 3D printer, which kind of looks like a robot in a sense, and has three arms that move up and down on linear rails, which are connected then to an end effector, or the nozzle basically, that then controls the motion. So those three arms control the motion of the nozzle. And it's really, it's a really interesting configuration. And so we're trying to do things to control them better and improve the quality of the 3D prints.
What's the advantage to me as a user of the three axis or the three armed?
So the big advantage with these printers is that they have the motors fixed. And so the motors don't move. And so you have a lighter mass that you're carrying around as you're moving back and forth. So with the typical 3D printers, you're either moving.
What advantage is that to me, though, as a user?
Right. Speed, acceleration speed. And so that means your print times are shorter. You can complete your prints in a quicker time. And so that's something that we think that that a lot of users want, and that the industry kind of wants. And so we're trying to see how we can improve these printers through our controls and improve the quality. Because usually usually when you have speed, it comes at the expense of quality. And so sometimes you have these printers have some quality issues. And so we're trying to improve those with our control.
Okay. And do you have a suggestion of a favorite printer of yours, or a printer that you might suggest, say, I'm an occasional user in my garage. What would you suggest that I get a printer?
Yeah. So, I mean, I really like the Prusa i3. I think Mark just said he had one. And so that's one of my favorites. And I think.
And why is that a favorite? What is it that you like about it? And how is it better than others?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's really hard to say, you know, which 3D printers are better than other 3D printers. I think it really just comes down to, personal preference. I think for me, and this is really maybe not such a good answer, but I think it's very highly rated by a lot of different people, a lot of different sites, where a lot of users really don't have quality issues with the Prusas typically. And then also you can, on a lot of these printers, and I think the Prusa as well, you can sort of, if you need replacement parts, you can actually just print them out onto, and they I think they provide source files for you to access that as well. I know some other printers that do that, and I think the Prusa does that as well.
I also like that. I think of all the 3D printers I've owned, the Prusa company itself is like really responsive. Joseph Prusa is like available to talk to anybody. They have updates. They have great tutorial videos. So you feel like you're really part of kind of a community when you have a Prusa.
Yeah.
Okay. So there probably are, I don't know, maybe $800 or something. If somebody had to go with a more beginner model, do you have any suggestions in your own experience?
Yeah. So for the more beginner model, I usually suggest the Creality 3. I think it's the version 3D printer, because those are really cheap. I think they're around $150 or maybe $200. They definitely not more than $300. Again, well reviewed. So they're usually first or second on some of these lists. It is a Chinese company, so you probably don't have the same access to the creators as you do with Joseph Prusa. But those are typically a nice entry level printer.
Okay, that's cool. And it's, you said just a few $100s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's a great starting price.
It's a great way to try things out. Yeah. Okay. So Nusa, what's your second favorite tool?
So the second tool I put on here was the Notion note-taking tool. And it's a website, a startup, started by I think just some guys who who wanted to make this. And basically it's kind of like Evernote. I think I would compare it to Evernote, but they have these really sleek templates that you can use to sort of organize your notes in a more in a way that kind of suits what the notes are about. So, for example, if you want, for example, I have a list of sort of books and articles and things that I read that I take notes on, and I just keep them on this running sort of spreadsheet-like template that allows me to basically insert a new book and keep track of like where I am in the book. Like you can have sort of different statuses in the book. Like, are you reading it? Have you finished it? Have you given it to someone? You know, all these different things. And then you can also have like different columns for rating the book. And so you can keep track of sort of just these different metrics that allow you to kind of see all that you've read and sort of go back easily and refresh yourself on what you've read. And so I just really like how sort of easy it is to use. And they also, I think, recently embedded, I haven't used this yet, but they recently embedded equations into the tool. And so you can basically, like you do on your, like you write commands on LaTeX, for instance, if you use that to type papers or whatever notes you type. So you can embed equations directly into Notion. And so this is useful for people who maybe are doing research like me and are doing some sort of mathematics to be able to include notes from papers that you're reading. For example, if you want to include the equations in those papers to refresh yourself, so you don't always have to go back to the paper.
So what we should say about it is that it's a web-based app that does have like mobile apps that access it too, but you can get to it on your laptop on the web. And you also, it's a shareable thing. You can share you can share one page or one notebook with multiple people. So you can also do collaborative type of work on it as well. I actually write in it every evening and my son and I and our family. We have notions that we share, you can put tables, you can put images. It's like Evernote in the sense that you can throw lots of things in it. But there's a little bit more. What's the word? There's a little bit more manipulation and construction that you can do within it than you can do within Evernote.
Yeah, it reminds me kind of like a combination of a wiki, Evernote, HyperCard, and what web design should have been in the first place for like everyday people. Like you can put together a beautiful website in a WYSIWYG interface. Mm-hmm. This is what the web should have been like when it started from the get-go, if you ask me.
And are you using it, Mark, yourself?
I've just started playing around with it a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
And so I'm so glad that you brought this one up, Nosa, because I was hoping someone would mm-hmm. would recommend this.
Right. And so, Nosa, you use it, you said, for your research. So maybe just describe how you might be using it in yourself during an ordinary day.
Yeah. So for me, I usually try to read a paper every day for at least an hour. And so I found that, you know, it's really hard to keep track of what you read just because you're reading so much. And so having some place that is really easily accessible that I can take these notes in. And I should also note that there's, I don't know if they're still doing this, but when I got an account, it was free for students. And so if you have a student account, you can get basically unlimited access to Notion for free. So students out there, take advantage of that.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Okay. I think there is still a freemium model where you may be able to use it for free for a certain amount of time or with a certain restrictions on how much you can put up. And then it turns into a subscription model at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's their business model.
Yeah. And with this, with the student accounts, you don't have any restrictions on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. So tell us about another tool that you want to tell everybody about.
Yes. So the next tool is the book called The Elements of Style by William Strunk Jr. and E.B. White. And it's basically a writing handbook. William Strunk Jr. was a professor, I think, at Columbia or a university in New York. I don't remember exactly where it was, but he essentially had this handbook that he gave to all his students. And one of his students, E.B. White, decided when he passed away to sort of revise this handbook and publish it. And so it's really, really a handbook that everyone who's writing something, and as a PhD student, I tend to write quite a bit, should keep sort of next to them and should read at least once a year to kind of refresh how writing should be done and how it's best, sort of the best ways to approach it.
Can you give some examples of some of the wisdom that you've gotten from it?
Yeah, some of it is sort of more general. And so I think one of the things that has just been embedded in my writing is sort of the idea of scarcity with words and not overusing words. I think when we begin writing, and I also did this, we tend to sort of overuse or like sort of, we use a lot more words than we need to use to describe things. And so this emphasis on very simple writing and very clear and concise writing is particularly important for academia, but also important, I think, in general in whatever you're writing.
Yeah, there's a lot of about stripping away things and a kind of a minimalist approach. And also, by the way, the book itself is a paragon example of really great writing. So not only do they give good advice, but the example of the writing in the book itself is a real template for how to write clearly and succinctly and still gracefully.
Exactly.
And it's, you can probably find used copies of it for almost nothing because it's been around a long time. It's not changed. And many, many students have, you know, gotten one for class. So I don't know, maybe it's even, there's a PDF of it somewhere. Who knows?
Yeah. I think there actually are PDFs floating out there.
Right. I highly recommend it. And I thought, like your idea of reviewing it once a year, and I should myself go back and look at it again because I haven't seen it in a couple of years. So
it's worth revisiting for sure.
Yes, it is, as always. So You have a third writing related tool.
Yeah. I guess I do a lot of writing, huh? well, this is I think more of a productivity related tool. And I came across this idea a few years ago, and I've sort of been using it ever since. And it's this idea of bullet journals. So there is a whole community of bullet journalists, and there are videos and there are tutorials out there about how to do this. But I don't quite use it in that same, in sort of any prescribed manner. So I think I just use it basically as a tool to organize my day every day. And mm-hmm. I think this is sort of generally the sort of wing of advice that a lot of these bullet journal evangelists are preaching. So they come sort of pre-marked, on each page. And so my particular bullet journal looks like every sort of page that you go to has the day of the week. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then you can also, there's also some space to write in the date of the week. And then in each, they're sort of divided into, these days are divided into rows. And so in each row, you can basically write what you need to write for that day. And so the way I use it is to write down basically the tasks that I need to complete each day. And the way I do it is I put them in two columns. So I have a must do column for my tasks for the day and a might do column for those tasks. And so basically I usually keep one or two things in the must do column, and then all the other things that I might do on that day, I try to put on the might do column.
Okay. So this is a paper book. This is a kind of like a blank book with, you know, the lines in it, but it's a bound paper book. Why in this day and age of computers and you just talking about Notion, why are you doing this on physical paper?
Yeah. That's a good question. I've tried a lot of different ways to do this. And I think I just find that the fact that these journals are so small and you can take them anywhere, so it's not really a big it's not really a big ask to sort of carry it around. And there's actually something I think that there's something cathartic about writing things down on paper. I don't mean to sound old school, but I guess I might in this sense. But there's something like really reinforcing about writing things down. And then also the, I don't know if you can do this on Notion, maybe you can, but I put these, so the way the grids are designed, they're designed in sort of squares. And so you can create these boxes or check boxes that you can check off once you complete a task. And I think that's probably the most satisfying part of this whole system is that when I finish something, I get to put a check mark in that box. And so it's just like a reinforcement approach that allows me to sort of continue, that makes me come back to do it multiple times.
Well, that I hope Notion architects are listening, because you should put in your little check boxes in Notion and everybody will be using it all the time. So the bullet journals, this idea that when you are kind of moving things forward, the next day if you don't finish, then you have to rewrite them onto the next day's page, and that writing it is something in terms of does something to your mind by having to carry things forward and rewrite things?
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily do that. And like I said, there's a lot of tutorials about like how you should do this. And so I don't necessarily follow them. But I think for me, I think for anyone who has a lot on their mind, and has a lot of things that they sort of need to do on their mind, I think this is great. But you can also do this with other journals. I think this organization just works really well for me. And so I can always see, so I always try to get done the must do tab on each day, but I can always go back and see the might do and bring things over from might do into must do the next day. So I think, yeah, sometimes I rewrite something. Sometimes I just write same as yesterday, because I didn't do anything from the day before, but yeah, I think that's maybe one way to see it.
Do you use those special symbols to mark off the things if it's like partially completed or delegated or scheduled? all that kind of stuff?
No, I don't. I don't do that.
Check mark.
Yeah, okay. I just use the checkbox.
Some people get like really into it and get super nerdy with these.
Yeah, yeah. The person that introduced me to these was super into it, and she would have different colors for different tasks, and you can do a lot with mm-hmm. them. But it's a nice way to just be productive and have fun sort of while doing it.
Yeah, that's cool.
So Nussi, you have a podcast called How to Do Grad School. Maybe you could tell us about that. And also, I'd be interested in kind of if you could tell us one thing that someone going to grad school should know that maybe you didn't know or you wish someone had told you.
Yeah, yeah. I started the podcast a few weeks ago, actually, in kind of response to a feeling that I had coming out of undergrad, and that a lot of my friends had also, of just not really knowing what grad school was like and not really knowing what academia was like. I think a lot of us during undergrad thought that our professors, you know, just taught classes and then went home. Whereas that's just a tiny sliver of what our professors actually do. They are basically running the school or running the department. And that's part of their job, and as well as research and other things. And so I think the idea for the podcast was just one, to expose people to what grad school is like. And then I think secondly, there are a lot of sort of best practices that successful grad students tend to implement. So things like like reading regularly and having a regular reading habit, and also writing regularly and things like that. And, you know, creating groups and forming groups with other PhD students to share your research with them, to practice communicating your research. So just these little things that people will share on the podcast. And so, yeah, basically what it is I just talk to current and former graduate students. So people like professors or postdoctoral researchers, and try to get a sense of what they did in grad school to be successful and how they conduct their research.
And what's one thing that you wish someone had told you before you started?
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I think I wish someone had told me is just how important mentorship is for graduate students. I think a lot of graduate students come in and feel like they should know already what to do. But this idea of actually like spending time to seek out mentors and not being scared to send emails to people, to meet with you, to talk with you about your ideas and talk with you about how you can sort of do grad school better. I don't think a lot of people, a lot of grad students that I know spend a lot of time thinking about pursuing mentors and cultivating mentors. And so that's something I wish I had thought of before grad school.
And you can have multiple mentors, plural, right?
Exactly. Exactly. As many mentors as you want.
Sure. There was, I don't know, in the very early days of the internet, there was a long document written by a guy named Phil Agee, I think, about how to research and if you're a grad student. And this was almost pre-web. This was sort of in the days when you had to go to a gopher and dig up a document, but it was very much in tune with what you're doing. It was basically how to be a graduate student and do graduate research. And it's still probably worth digging up somewhere in the bowels of the internet. I'm sure this document lives on. It might fit into your program there. So you're now in grad school yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm in my fourth year.
Wow. And, what's one last thing that you might say? Is there a particular tool besides the ones that you mentioned that you'd also suggest someone who's in grad school use that may only apply to people who are in grad school?
That is an interesting question.
Do you use things like where they rate professors and stuff like that? Is that of any use in trying to determine whether you're going to attend the class, or are there any other kind of tools that help you be a good student?
There are a few websites online that allow you to get sort of other people's feedback about professors and which classes to take. But the experience for the experience is very different for different people. So it's very hard to say. And I think for me also, I tend to not use, I don't like adding too much to the to my studying. I kind of just, you know, textbook and read and try to gain information that way. So I try not to do too much extra in that. So
have you ever encountered like journal clubs and things where you share the burden of having to read papers by divvying them up and then one person reads it deeply and reports to the other in the group? Do you do things like that?
Yeah, actually, that's a great point. I guess I didn't think hard enough. So I have been in a few journal clubs. And so the idea for the journal clubs are a paper is assigned each week, and one person will sort of go in depth into the paper and present the basically present what the paper said to the rest of the group, who will also read the paper. And in addition to that, I think you can also sort of extend that into classes. And so recently, actually during this whole quarantine period, some of my friends and I were interested. So I'm in mechanical engineering, but some of my friends and I were interested in learning about data science and machine learning. So we basically sort of self-constructed a class where we, you know, found some textbooks online and just basically assigned a chapter each week to a different person. And that person would, we would have a Zoom call, and that person would teach that chapter, make some slides and teach that chapter to the rest of us.
Cool. Right. And the thing I've been noticing is that more and more people are actually recording these and putting them on YouTube. So you can actually search YouTube for journal club reports. So instead of that just going to the group, it goes wider, and you can this sometimes for me the best way is to read a paper is to find someone who's done a journal club report on that paper.
Wow, I didn't know about that. So I'll actually look out for that now.
And maybe encourage you to do it yourself if you guys are recording on Zoom. Just record it and put it up on YouTube.
No, so I have a question. Is there an easy address, website, or social media account that you could tell me where people could find out about you and how to get to your podcast, How to Do Grad School?
Yeah. So I'm on Twitter at NOSA_DOT_EDU. So I'm kind of co-opting the typical .edu that academic email addresses will have. And then also on Twitter, the podcast, you can find the podcast at htdgs. So that's How to Do Grad School, just the first letter, podcast on Twitter as well.
Okay, great. HTDGS.
Podcast, yeah.
Podcast. Okay, so we will put this into the show notes. So if you're, you just go to cool-tools.org and you'll be able to see everything that NOSA talked about and click on links to get to his podcast and his Twitter account. NOSA, thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, we really enjoyed it.
Thank you all for having me. It was really fun.
Hey everybody, it's your co-host Mark, and I wanted to let you know that we have a lot more going on here in Cool Tools than just this podcast. We have our flagship website where we review a new tool every day. That's at cool-tools.org. We also have 4 different newsletters. We have this podcast. We have a YouTube channel where we review tools. And if you like what you hear and see and read, the best way to help us out is by going to our Patreon page at patreon.com/cooltools and donate at any level you wish. You can even contribute $1 a month, and that would mean a lot to us. The money that you give us will go towards paying for our transcribing costs, editing videos, and editing the podcast. It goes towards paying contributors who write the reviews for us. It goes towards our equipment costs, our hosting costs, and it supports our very small company of 3 people. This week, I wanted to give a shout out to some of our Patreon supporters who have been giving us at least $2 a month. And if you give us $2 a month, we'll give you a shout out online. And this week, I would like to thank Michael Sacochia, Molly Starr, M. Velderman, Opposable Thumbs, Pamela Cooley, Patrick Weyer, Paul Hosey, Randy Fisher, Stuart Burroughs Brand, Synaptic Sam, Therese Schwartz, Tom Hawkins, Tom Markham, What Bear, Javier Pangolin, David Lang, Eric Byers, Sean Hartley, Stephen Powell, Greg Lichtscheidt, John Hobson, Adam Bristol, Adam Naher, Anonymous, Bill Kempthorne, Bruce I. Niles, Chris Woodruff, C. Kolos, Daryl Flynn, Egg Fleegoff, Eric Hanschrau, Eric Hoover, Godfrey Saldana, Jay Skiles, John M. Larson, Jude Galligan, Kenneth Gilman, and Lucas Frank. Thank you very much for supporting the show, and we will see you next week.